One of Russia's biggest tycoons resigns from Rusal, and Europe gets tough on privacy. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vivienne Nunes. Good morning. The Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska has resigned as director of his multi-billion dollar aluminium firm Rusal as he tries to persuade the US to lift sanctions that had put the company in jeopardy. Rusal's chief executive and half of its board stepped down yesterday. Stocks in Rusal and parent company EN Plus have risen on the news, having tumbled when the sanctions were announced. Chris Weifer is a partner at Macro Advisory.
Oleg Deripaska is one of the most prominent Russian oligarchs. He gained his business in the 90s during the privatization period under President Yeltsin. He's also had very strong political connections. He married the daughter of Yeltsin's head of administration. And over the last 25 years has built up an empire in the metals and mining business and is ranked as one of Russia's richest men.
He was targeted by recent US sanctions against Russian business leaders. What's he hoping to achieve by stepping down as director of Rusal?
Well, he's hoping that the US will relieve the sanctions on his companies, on Rusal and on EN Plus, which, of course, is a London-listed company. And the US government have essentially said that if he does distance himself from these companies, then they will consider relaxing the sanctions.
And do you think the Kremlin had any role in tapping him on the shoulder and encouraging Deripaska to make this step?
I would expect so, because Rusal and Mr. Deripaska's business are very sort of important companies within Russia. They're big employers. And also, I think there's another political issue here as well. If there is a compromise done on Rusal and on these sanctions, then I guess the broader hope is that the US may have made its point and perhaps reduces the risk of any other companies or oligarchs being sanctioned, at least over the medium term.
Chris Weifer. Let's do the numbers. President Trump's decision to call off a planned meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un dragged down stock markets in Asia. Meanwhile, European shares rebounded from yesterday's losses. Businesses with customers in the European Union face heavy fines if they don't comply with new data protection rules that come into effect today. The General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, is designed to give EU citizens more rights over how their personal information is used. Greg Sparrow at Compliance Point told me more.
GDPR is really about establishing trust with the online marketplace and creating transparency with the consumer around the information which is being collected about them and how that's being used.
I wonder how companies in the US are viewing these regulations. Are they being seen as overly bureaucratic, or is Europe seen to be taking the lead on this?
I think a lot of US-based organizations certainly see it as a reach into their operations, maybe an overreach a bit. But I think, to me, what we're seeing is companies are really becoming much more aware of how they need to engage the consumer and the fact that privacy is important to those consumers.
Over here in Europe, we've all been getting a lot of emails from organizations and businesses asking us to confirm that we want to allow them to have our data. There is a risk that some businesses and organizations will lose their client base because of having to get this compliance, isn't there?
Yes, and I think that's one of the biggest concerns, particularly those that are consumer-facing brands. They are very concerned about losing large portions of their customer contact database, and they're really looking at how do they comply with GDPR, but also still market and sell to the customers that they have.
Greg Sparrow. India wants to be an economic superpower. It also wants to be a sporting one. The country won a record 66 medals at the recent Commonwealth Games. Many of them were won by women. So does that mean that sport is a level playing field in the world's largest democracy? The BBC's Rahul Tandon reports from Calcutta.
Every evening, millions of Indians, men and women, turn on their televisions and hear that song. It's the theme tune to the IPL, the world's richest cricket league. But with more girls now playing the sport, many women here are asking, where's the female IPL? 16-year-old Rinjimi Mazumdar is mad about cricket. She spends all her spare time practicing at this park in Kolkata. She wants to become a professional cricketer, but if that's going to happen, she says this country needs a professional women's league.
I guess the male IPL has been such a hit that female IPL definitely would bring more girls to the game, and it would increase the popularity and quality of cricket being played.
You want to be a professional cricketer. If there was a female IPL, would it make your life easier?
It would. It'd be as good as the guys, right? It'd give you more popularity, and it would increase the popularity of the game as well.
Sport is just a reflection of the attitudes that many people have on streets like this in India. Whilst other parts of the world are discussing equal pay in sports, India's just beginning a debate about equal access to them. Lovely Dasgupta is an expert on women's sport here in India.
I think that reflects the cultural ethos of this country, where you always treat it as a favour when you permit the woman to play a sport. Women cricket doesn't get the kind of sponsorship that the men cricketers get. It's there for everyone to see. When you talk about Indian sports, the female are, you know, they feel gratified if they're given that opportunity, because they have to fight the barriers that are imposed by the family, by the society, and then come to the field. So by the time they reach the field, they're more than happy to kind of, you know, get whatever opportunity they get.
If India wants to develop economically, it needs more women in the workplace. Getting more boys and girls playing sport together can help break down some of the conservative attitudes that are currently preventing that from happening.
In Calcutta, I'm the BBC's Rahul Tandon for Marketplace.
And finally, Malaysian police say bags of cash totaling $29 million and more than 400 designer handbags have been found in homes belonging to former Prime Minister Najib Razak. He lost the recent election and is being investigated over graft allegations worth hundreds of millions of dollars. In London, I'm Vivienne Nunes with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.